Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport. You're listening to me, Charlie Hawkins, and I've been joined by the boys from the Back of the Nest podcast, DR Kernas, James Howard and Nick Gillard. Thank you for joining me in the studio. The Premier League is upon us. No more pre-season.
Yay. No more
match fitness, match sharpness. We're finally here. A big game this week, kicking off to Everton. We're going to be talking a little bit about season preview. Gary Cahill has finally signed. Also, a little bit about social media. Steve Parrish, that all seems to be developing a little bit. And of course, we're going to be getting the opposing view for the Everton journalist. Hopefully, won't talk too much about Zaha because we're hoping he's in Palace colours this weekend, not Everton. 2 days still to go, though. A lot could happen in the window. But we have been talking about transfer signings. We said Palace weren't doing much business. DR, you was getting, you said the fans were frustrated. James, you was just sort of letting it play out a little bit. You weren't getting as frustrated as DR.
I heard the players are frustrated as well. On the inside, a friend of a friend said that the players...
Sources.
It is a reliable source. DR can back me up on this because he was there too. But they said the players were fuming that nobody had been signed, so hopefully...
Well, it's interesting that you say that because, you know, we know the fans get frustrated. We are fans. We talk to fans. But the players, they want to push on. They want to compete. They want to be signing players. They want to see this team do as well as they can, especially when Palace have got $50 million for Wan-Bissaka. We know there's a balance in the book acts, but as fans, we don't see it as that way. We want to see it reinvested in the team straight away. But what I was going to say is, we have signed Gary Cahill. All right, it might not be a name that gets everyone out their seats and it's a name that's going to dazzle in the lights, but he's a proven Premier League player. He's won the Champions League. He's won the Premiership. He's a good defender. James, sort of, I'm scared you seem to have rolled your eyes there. What are you making of the Gary Cahill signing?
To be honest with you, I was looking at the social media from the other fans that were commenting on that move to Crystal Palace. And he was targeted by a number of clubs, including Arsenal. And most,
I know a lot of Arsenal fans that would have had him, really had him.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to think that, you know, he was on a free transfer, so he's going to be in demand. I think that's a major coup for us, actually. And I'm really, really happy with all the comments I've been reading about him, not from Palace fans, but other fans.
Damien Delaney wasn't young when he started playing for us. And he was a great servant for a good few seasons and helped push us for promotion in the early years, stay up. Cahill, no offence to Damo, sorry, Luce, is head and shoulders above him. So not only will he steady the ship in there, bit of leadership, but also on the training ground, you've got players like Woods coming through, who we hope to see. You've got Mitchell coming through, all right, he's a fullback, not centre-back, but hopefully he's a wise head in there and somebody perhaps we could keep at Palace to kind of help players through. The only problem we got is, I think, I can't remember where I said it, but the age of the squad worries me.
But what you are getting with Gary, I know you want to get in there, DR, is that you are getting this leadership. He's been there, he's done it, he's seen it all. Yeah. He can be a wise head for the younger players. But what I found interesting about this deal, he only played twice last season for Chelsea. We mentioned his age, 33, but you're going to get a fresh player. He hasn't, you know, he's had a year, really. I don't want to say sitting on the bench, but he hasn't played for Chelsea. He's going to be fresh. He's not coming off an injury. So you're getting a young, fresh 33-year-old, which is something to be said.
Yeah, it is. But the only worry that I kind of had was the wages plus the age combination, as Nick mentioned. In terms of the player himself, like, I'm not worried at all because I feel like he can still do it at the highest level at Premier League. But it's the fact that we've got aging squad and it's going to be under contract until 35 years old. And that's my only worry. Maybe it makes a bit more sense if one of Scott Dan or Martin Kelly leaves. But I doubt Martin Kelly leaves.
There's been rumours about Dan going, but every year there's rumours about Dan going.
So if Scott Dan actually does leave, then it makes a bit more sense. But overall, it's you look at our defence, you've got Mamadou Sakho, James Tompkins, Gary Cahill. It's looking good.
I think a big influence is, I was just looking before coming on, that he played 61 caps for England and 39 of those were under Roy Hodgson. Mm. So Roy obviously knows him very, very well. And he knows he probably's got a player that is fit, likes to keep himself fit, well-disciplined. Even at the age he is, we all know that defenders can go on and on and on. And I think, you know, that's the reason we've probably just given him a two-year contract, because you just never know if the legs are going to hold out. But I'm confident, and I think, and it was reported in the press, that he's going to be on about 75k a week.
But when you are signing him for a free transfer, they always get more in wages because the club haven't paid a penny in a transfer fee. And not only that, I know as fans, we say, oh, we signed him for 2 years. We've got him to his 35. Him and his agent probably wouldn't have taken a deal for 12 months because they want that security of a two-year deal. And defenders, you mentioned there, James, the age, the freshness, but defenders, they've always got that first yard in their mind, doesn't he? He's a savvy defender. And something I like about Gary Cahill, he's not really a player that's in the news or, you know, diva at training. He's out one for drinking. He seems the ultimate professional, doesn't he? I think that's the player that Palace are getting here.
And also he knows Roy. Really knows Roy from the England days, so... You know.
Yeah, and this is it. James has said, I mean, 39 caps under Roy Hodgson. Roy's going to get the best out of him. He knows how he works. Gary wants to stay in London. I genuinely think this is a better deal than maybe you can say more, but the majority of Palace fans are making out here.
Well, it's a win-win. I mean, Roy's obviously said to him, look, come to us, I'm going to give you regular football. Whereas if he, you know, he's only had, like you said, the two appearances over the last 12 months. That must have been so frustrating for him to be an England international, to play regularly every season up until one season ago. So he's thinking, this is, you know, the twilight of my career. I need to play regularly. Do I go to Arsenal? Might be end up on the bench again. So I think it's...
It'd be starting, James, don't worry.
Fantastic. Well, maybe these days.
We've got no defenders.
The only confusing bit is the... You know how you said he might start regularly? If he starts regularly, then James Tompkins and Mamadou Sakho combination, which worked fine, it means that will have to break up.
Well, Tompkins is injured.
Yeah, but when he comes back?
Yeah, when he comes back. The other thing I saw on social media is that actually we're signing him so that Dan can play up front.
I saw that. I mean, Dan scored lots of goals for us under Alan Pardew, oddly enough, but I doubt that's going to happen. Yeah.
Didn't Tompkins play at fullback once or twice?
I'm not saying he can,
but I'm just wondering if that's a possibility.
I think he might have for West Ham, but it's not his preferred position, is it?
I can never imagine that. But that's going to be interesting.
But we haven't got fullbacks, have we, really?
Yeah.
So we are desperate in the fullback situation.
Well, there is just under 2 days in the transfer window left. You have signed Gary Cahill. Can we see someone? I know it's less than 48 hours, but can we see Palace add into it now? Because we talked about Roy Hodgson's comments last week. Again, he said he's come out in the media again. He said he wants another four signings. Palace might get one. I can't see them getting another four, can they?
Well, before we move on to this chap, Camarasa, who I've noticed that a Spanish journalist has been tweeting about coming over from Real Betis, can we just have a moment to celebrate the Crystal Palace career of Sorloth? Yeah. He's gone.
We need music.
I think that it's been a harsh lesson for those who waited 3 days for the club shop to get those funny Danish O's in so they could get their name on the back of his shirt when he first signed.
He's gone.
So they deserve a refund, don't they?
Don't sign anybody your mates recommend that you knew from years ago. And if you do sign somewhere bad, there's always hope that somebody from Turkey will take them.
Yeah, so exactly. It's always like that, trust me. I'm Turkish. And
I'm at the airport waiting for DR's connections on that field, didn't they?
I'm so surprised. Like, I watched the videos and there was actual fans at midnight waiting for Sorloth to come.
No.
Really?
Yeah, with flares and stuff.
Crackers, fireworks. I mean, it was amazing.
It's like that, Turkey. But yeah, you mentioned the name Camarasa. Hopefully that's happening because that's the one transfer that I was actually looking forward to. He played well under Warnock at Cardiff last season, got Premier League experience, and it seems like that's another transfer that could potentially be done in the coming day.
Do you think Warnock's putting a good word for us?
I think so. I feel like Parrish still has a good relationship with Warnock, and Warnock has a good relationship with Palace, and it seems like it anyways, the way that it's worked out.
That's an interesting point, actually, because you'd have thought he might have done, but then I thought and I read somewhere that Warnock was unhappy about the way he was moved on from Crystal Palace last time.
Oh, they're is all it? Unhappy. It's like Spinal Tap, isn't it, Crystal Palace managers?
I don't think he'll hold a grudge, like Love Island. I'm not too sure.
If Palace do bring players in, then is it will it now be seen as a not a desperate buy, but a panic buy? Because, you know, it's easy to say, well, we've had the whole window. Why are we now waiting till 48 hours left? We know other dominoes need to fall. But will this now be Palace caving into fan pressure, or they would have gone after targets already in mind?
I don't think so, because there has been a trickle of transfer activity over the last week or so, but I don't think there's been a major amount of transfers going backwards and forwards. And I think
it's been a quiet window on the whole, hasn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not easy to find players out there. And I think sometimes, you know, you've got to find a player to release a player. So, you know, for the likes of, I don't think Zaha will go, because I think it's too late for him to go. But we would have needed to have had a replacement for Zaha to have allowed him to go. So I think there's always that questionable, you know, remarks sort of whether or not you let a player go and take a risk in finding someone to replace him, or you just, and I think most clubs are now saying, well, we're not going to allow anyone to go unless we've got the replacement already lined up.
James, do you think it's been a quiet window on the whole because of now financial fair play, and this is really how few windows could go on from here?
I do, yeah. I definitely think it has. And I think the money is just crazy. It's just ridiculous. Yeah.
You completely read my mind there. And the other thought that I had, and I said it quite jokingly, but it could be a fortune, is the pound is tanking at the moment. You're not getting much. You're not getting much bang for your buck. Mm. So, you know.
See, this isn't just a Crystal Palace fan show. This is financial. This is, you get it all here, 8 to 9, Crystal Palace on Love Sport.
Somebody should have got on the blower to Steve Parrish and said, look, the pound's tanking. If you don't get these players in quick, you ain't going to be able to afford them.
We should be exporting a lot of players in.
Yeah, like...
Well, we did with Sherlock.
Like Suarez to Troy. Troy's? How do you pronounce it? But yeah, Pepe Suarez gone.
Yeah. Okay. But in terms of panic,
your honesty.
Always. Honesty is the best policy.
But in terms of the panic buy, I feel like the right back position might be a panic buy, because with Gary Cahill, we were rumoured with him. With Camarasa, we were rumoured with him. And I know it's taken a bit of while, but with right backs, we've been rumoured with individuals, but it's like they rumour, then it's gone. And it seems like there's no real. A real player that we're actually targeting.
I thought you've hit the nail on the head there, Dio, because the rumours that we've spoke about in the last 2 weeks, not rumours, but so players, yeah. Now we're not speaking about them this week. It's that sort of, the bubble sort of already washed away, hasn't it?
Yeah, so it seems like a right-back position, which we desperately do need, might be a panic buy.
How good is this Mitchell, though, coming through?
But he's a left-back.
He's a left-back.
And
well,
also, we need depth. Yeah, I know, but I'm not too sure if he can play right back, but we need depth at left back as well, because now Suarez is gone and Jeffrey Schlupp, he's of course, Roy doesn't see him as a left back.
Kelly can cover.
Well, yeah, I don't know if he could play fullback, to be honest.
Well, yeah, DR says they need a right back. Nick brought up that they've got a left back. He might be able to switch. They need more signings. They've signed Gary Cahill, but are they ready for the season? We're going to be taking a closer look next.
Love Sports.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I've been joined by the guys from the Back of the Nest podcast, DR Kernaz, James Howard and Nick Gillard. The season is upon us. We are starting with Everton. We've been talking a little bit about transfer window, but how ready are the Eagles for the new season, DR? We know it's been a quiet window, but how are you feeling ahead of the new season?
Well, in terms of looking at pre-season results, I know pre-season is meant to be a fitness test, but
the
Hertha Berlin game, it didn't seem that great. But then again, we didn't have Wilfried Zaha, Cheikh Okuyate, which many people don't mention. He hasn't been with the squad as well, and I feel like he could still play a decent role. And of course, our main centre-backs, Mamadou Sakho, I know he's played a couple games, but he doesn't seem like he isn't fully fit, yeah? And James Tompkins. So it's not like we've had a best squad out there, but I'm still looking forward to it. It's Palace, and the actual football starts on Saturday. I feel like we've got a decent manager in Roy Hodgson who could actually keep us up, but I'm not too sure if he could bring us to the next step. But yeah, it should be an interesting season.
We're not ready for the new season.
Okay.
But that's the Palace.
Don't hold back, Nick.
That's the Palace way. We never are. I mean, Tony Pulis leaving the day before, we've had in the past. So to actually have a manager that's going to be with us over two summers in a row, it kind of feels like it steadied the ship, though you wouldn't have think so on social media. Zaha, I don't think, will be ready to play the full 90 minutes, simply because he hasn't played with the team, although our main option, I was saying at the weekend in the chat while we were watching the game, was he's our main option. Give it to Wilf. Without that, we ain't much at the moment, I don't think. Seeing Meyer do very well in the friendlies is good. Hopefully he'll get more game time. So he can kind of fill the boots of Yohan Cabaye a little bit more, because we missed him more than I thought we would last season.
Yeah, personally, I'm really keen on seeing how well the forwards do. They've been together for most of the summer. Okay, IU might have missed a couple of weeks because he wasn't signed, but he'd been with the team last season. So
he was busy getting the striker still, of the AFCON, so don't diss him, mate.
So he's still relatively fit, but you've got Connor Wickham, who's now had a good 6 months back in the squad.
And this is a big year for Connor, isn't it? This is proving this year.
I do not. He's probably the one player that I'm really keen on seeing develop.
I would agree with you there.
Over the summer. And Benteke, you know, I still haven't. I'm sorry. I know DR thinks it's going to be possibly his season, but I'm still not.
You have
confident.
To believe, James.
So, if we keep Zaha, brilliant. We'll always rely on him. Connor Wickham, I think, could be the surprise package if he stays fit. And then maybe, you know, are you and I'm confident and hopeful that we'll get another decent striker in before the end of the week as well.
The weird thing about Connor Wickham is that around, like 2 days ago, there were rumours that he could possibly join a championship club. So I wonder.
Really?
I saw
what
that on social
club?
Media. I think Bristol City, I 100% remember that, but I'm not too sure about the two other clubs. So that could be interesting. If Connor Wickham leaves us, does that mean another striker is coming? Or I'm not too sure. But yeah, in terms of...
That would be very strange, though, just to interrupt, wouldn't it? Considering Palace stuck by him through the injury hell and they gave him a new contract only 6 months ago. They gave him that extension, didn't they?
Well, can I bring up social media at this point? Because the waters are so obfuscated. What is true? What is rumour? I mean, I've just quoted a Spanish journalist talking about...
Victor Camarasso.
Camarasso. And, you know, I said, oh, he's a journalist. Must be true. But we've had stories that... The transfers are being talked up by people who are going to get a percentage if the player's sold. Now, I don't know whether there's any truth in those sort of rumours.
I think there is, 100%. I feel like agents, every summer, they will always push stories just to benefit them. So
yeah.
I feel like with Zaha, it's been a similar type of situation, because you saw it, journalists were saying that Everton are going to put in a second bid, but Everton actually put out a statement saying that that's not true. I feel like... They did put a first bid, but then after that, it's not true. But yet again, today, we're still talking about Everton putting a new bid in.
Back when Steve Parrish used to talk to podcasts, in our whole radio days, we interviewed him a few times, and he did say in one of the interviews that 95% of what you read in the newspapers is absolute tosh, but he used a different word.
But why do fans still believe it? Because we're so thirsty for any news about our club. We buy into it, we get committed, we're invested. And we've just said it there, Nick. You just said, more than likely, it's not true.
Because it helps us get away from all the other rubbish in our life. Somebody saying, oh, I'm really not looking forward to going to football Saturday. It's going to be wrong. And I said, I don't care if we win. Well, I do care if we win the league. But it's that 90 minutes of the rest
escapism.
Of your life... being out the window, I'm throwing things out the window here with my hands, and the whole day and however we're doing, we're still going to be there, most of us. I mean, there'll be a few plastics that will disappear if we get relegated, but that's the whole point of the football, isn't it?
It's the build-up, it's the gossip, it's the chat, it's just the way we operate. You know, some people like to unwind and watch soaps like EastEnders. We like to unwind and watch and listen to football. And
the only reason
you can do both, James. James, you can do both. There's a world for both, mate.
The only reason I'm here on a Tuesday is because Holby City's on. I ain't sitting through that.
We're moving this show to Wednesday. No, we're not. No, look, we are talking about... But we are so thirsty for any transfer news, and it's almost the agents, they have to talk up a player. They know now. It's almost clickbait, isn't it? They know they can wind up the fans, and they know fans can create such momentum towards owners. I mean, we have been speaking about social media a lot, but now we're speaking about Steve Parrish on social media. Is there a pressure to sell Zaha? Isn't there a pressure to sell Zaha? There's pressure from above. It's like a vicious cycle, isn't it?
Yeah.
With the Steve Parrish situation, it's the fact that it's the abuse that yesterday he posted on his Instagram and Twitter that we signed Gary Cahill, and the abuse under it was just unwarranted. I was just disgusted by some fans. It's the fact that all right, he's a supporter too and he's an owner and not every decision he's made is correct. I've criticised him a lot. But, like, it's just, what's the point? We just signed a new player. All right, you might not be happy with the transfer, but personally abusing the chairman, it's just childish. It's disgusting.
Twitter needs a thing to come up. Before you post anything, it says, would you say this to their face? And then you can decide whether you post
then
it
there'll
or
be
not.
No tweets. Yeah. that's what it's like. Everyone's nowadays, you just let it all out on
in a broader
media.
Stroke, then, are we now fans? I'm generalising us. Let's take out Palace. Just are we as fans, or have we got greedy because we always want more? We wanted a signing. We got Gary Cahill and it's like, well, we want this. We want a right back or we want someone bigger. We never seem to be happy. The majority don't seem to be happy.
Not if you're a Bury fan. You just want your club to survive. And that's the sad thing. You've got all this money floating about and, you know, the grassroots is losing out.
Well,
and I know I'm moving away from that. But the money's just being sucked up to the top and... You know, we want more. But Gary Cahill, 75,000 a week. I mean, how much would he need to realistically earn to be set up for life?
Yeah, but it's a business.
That's what
I know. I know it is, but it's...
But every problem's relative because, you know, you see like Palace arguments or Newcastle, they want to boycott the club. And then you do look to a Bolton or a Bury and you think, oh, well, we're not in that situation. But it's relative to your club, isn't it?
You know, if Gary Cahill comes in and has a fantastic season... then he's worth every money that he's paid for weekly.
100%.
But last two seasons, Benteke, who's, I won't say what he's paid, but I suspect it's considerably more, hasn't been worth the money he's been paid. And quite rightly, the fans are frustrated and they are giving grief to the club saying, why do we keep hanging on to him? Why can't we replace him and get a new striker? And I think that's why, me personally, I'm concerned that we aren't moving on because we're not cutting our losses and we're not replacing players that we should be.
But no one has a crystal ball, James. You know, at the time of signing Benteke, I was excited. I'm not a Palace fan. I thought, they've signed Benteke. He's brilliant. He's an international. He's done it in this league. Admittedly, we've not got the productivity out of him in the last 2 years. Fans get frustrated. We need to replace him, move him on. But at the time when Palace did sign him, they didn't know that was going to be the case, did they?
At the time, he scored 17 goals in that season. So it's not like
we're fickle.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like it's been a complete failure. Of course, when you look at the last two seasons, injuries played a part and he doesn't seem like the player he was because of confidence issues and whatever. So, but he has scored goals at Palace and I know many people don't believe in him anymore, but he's fit now. He's played he's had his pre-season, so has Conor Wickham. So all we have to do is hope for the best.
What is it that they say when golfers can't putt? Is it they've got the jips or something? I'm just hoping.
That's what I have.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm hoping.
On every hole.
I played pitch and putt once when I was 11 and that was it because I got a club in my head because I wasn't looking where I was going. Maybe I say it every year. Hopefully this will be the season he comes good and it will save a lot of money. But we've almost got a plethora of strikers and we're saying, oh, we need another striker. I mean, James Daly looks like he might break through this season.
I don't think so. I'll be real honest. Yeah, I don't think so. I feel like the youth has... Well, I was talking about this on the pod the other day. I feel like the youth is disappointed in this pre-season because they had a chance against Barnet. It got absolutely battered. And yeah, I just don't see a thing. I just don't see Roy trusting the youth by his comments. It's like, yeah, Mitchell, he looked decent, but of course he's injured. And even like Luke Drayle, he doesn't seem like he sees them as real options out there.
Is Dean Kiely at the academy now?
Yeah, Dean Kiely, he's not... He's the goalkeeper coach.
He actually spoke about the academy coming through and he said, fans don't want to hear it. This was on Love Sport the other day, but he said, you have to stick with it because he's at Palace at the minute and the kids coming through are going to... They're very potential stars. They're rising stars, the next generation. But as fans, when there's 2 days left of a window that hasn't been great, you don't want to hear about the next 14-year-old who in 5 years is going to be fantastic, do you, I suppose?
No, unfortunately, you know, we're not in the Championship anymore. And these academy players, if they're going to make the first team, they're going to have the game of their lives. And then they're going to have to have the game of their lives for the next week and the week after and the week after. There's no room for any errors or weakness.
Which is exactly what Bissaka did.
Exactly.
And a season later, where Quid's in.
But as a Wan-Bissaka comes around every 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
50 million, though, you did balance the books. Well, we are talking the season preview. There's still more to cover. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the game. We've touched on him a little bit, but we're going to be talking about him a lot more next. It's Wilf Zaha.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport with me, Charlie Hawkins. I've been joined by the Back of the Nest podcast with DR Kernaz, James Howard and Nick Gillard. And just before we went there, we were talking a little bit about season preview. Gary Cahill has signed. We're going to be talking a little bit about Zaha, but Nick brought up a very good point. Nick, what was you on about Palace fans?
Well, James was just going on about perhaps pushing on or staying where we are. The Premier League is like three divisions, and we're going to be stuck in that division. I don't want to end up like Charlton fans and chucking everything out and stopping this steady progress. We've had 7 years in the top league. This is unprecedented for us.
An established side.
Established, like Stoke were. Mm. We thought Stoke were. So, you know, we know it's not going to last forever. But with all the wishful thinking, remember Charlton years ago when they got rid of Kurbishley, and we see Palace fans, they really want to push on. They think we should be pushing for that seventh spot. Are we in danger of overinflating everything and just crashing and ending up in League One?
Yeah, I think there's two camps of fans out there that some really want us to push on and spend and improve every season. I don't want to keep changing the manager. I want some stability. I was happy with Roy Hodgson throughout the whole season. And, you know, if we do end up mid-table, I'm happy with that. Maybe get a cup run. What I was saying is just, I'm not saying that we've got to spend millions and millions and buy lots of players. I just feel that sometimes we have to recognise that there is a weak link in the team. And we do need to sort of replace players and improve on those situations. I mean, you know, for example, it was the Benteke position I was sort of referring to. He's been, DR, you're right, the first half of first season he did okay, he did well, he got some penalties and some goals. But, you know, last two seasons he hasn't been doing the business. He's been in and out injured, but even when he's been fit, he just doesn't look like he's with it. He doesn't hold on to the ball, doesn't pass, he's not scoring enough. I just think sometimes we have to cut our losses and there has to be a bit more ambition to say, look, actually we need to move on in that situation. But I'm certainly not saying we need to move on because Roy's not improving every season or we're not improving and we're not pushing for a Europa place. You know, good luck to the teams like Wolves. Good luck to Leicester. You know, they've done really well. Good luck to Burnley. They got into Europe. If we do it, it'll be fun. I think we will have overachieved if we get a Europa place or we get in. I think we were 10th two seasons ago. So yeah, we have done pretty well. But yeah, we did drop back last season, but we had our reasons for it. But most definitely, at the end of next season, you know, hand on heart, I'll be just happy if we survive.
But I feel like the frustrations are actually coming from the teams that you listed in a way that fans are looking at Wolves. They're looking at even like Southampton. They had their season back in the day. I know not right now, but Watford.
Look at the money
they've got. Yeah, Watford. That's the thing. People don't think about the money. They just look at the teams. They're like, well, they were in our position and they managed to go for Europa League play. So why can't we? But of course, they don't think about the money. They don't think about us spending 80% of our revenue on wages and how tight we are right now. But that's what I think, that's what triggers that, and that's why it's become more hostile, especially on social media, because people's expectations have drastically changed by looking at other clubs and seeing where they are.
A thought's just occurred to me again about the aging squad. We do need to get people in, because if the average age is 28, 29, and then next year we haven't got any younger players in, the average age is going to be 30. Suddenly we're going to have to replace 8 or 9 players rather than 2 or 3. And, you know, is that sustainable to try and do it that way?
Nick, also, you mentioned there was a very, really interesting point that the Premier League is almost three divisions in itself. There's almost different tiers, the top tier, the elite tier, the middle tier, the lower one. Is that how fans view it, and that they settle almost for their tier, or should we try to break into that next tier? It's very different, because then as the tiers change, so does the money.
The days of Nottingham Forest getting promoted and then winning the top division the season after that, or the season they get promoted, long gone.
But more recent are the days where Leicester just won the Premier League, so we have seen it happen, and there wasn't someone before that happened, you would have put them in that top tier, would you?
Yeah, but have you seen a team that has suffered so few injuries in a season? There was a lot of luck in that, I think.
They still done it, though, over a 38-game season. And we can't discredit that.
No. But I think that season was... I think now Nick is absolutely spot on.
Yeah, no.
But I think a couple of seasons ago, when Leicester did, was it four seasons ago? I think that Man City were going through a massive change. Man United were going through a massive change. And it was that season where there was, you know, obviously so much change going on in those top four clubs. And Wenger was under pressure.
That Leicester almost took advantage.
Ferguson had left. And Leicester kind of just got that situation just perfect for them. Didn't have any injuries. Kept the same 11 week in, week out.
It was like 14
out.
Starters, wasn't he? It was ridiculous. Yeah. Was so low.
But next season, it's likely to be just between Man City and Liverpool again.
You say that when Liverpool were winning the European Cup in the 70s, I think all season they used 16 players. All right, they only had two subs then. But to do the whole European Cup, okay, it wasn't group games. It was knockout from the start, which is how it should be, kids. Proper yeah. Cup football. And you can see I'm a bit retro now, maybe for the first time. It's all going wrong.
I still feel like we underachieved last season in terms of our home form. It was just poor by our, even if we're meant to stay up, the fact that we struggled that badly at home. And you had Ray Lewington after the game actually speaking and saying exactly what the fans were saying, and saying that opposition's played different at home and we need to change it. But there's no signs of anything changing. That's why we'd be frustrated.
Well, this is it. This is our fans. Their perception changes, because after one good year, James, you said two seasons ago we came 10th. Then last year was a bit of a struggle. Our home form weren't great, and straight away, DR, not as in to put it on you, but you're like, we've let ourselves down. We've done a lot worse. When really, the perception should be, or the standard, should I say, every year, not just to survive, but mid-table, we're happy with it. Whether we have a little blip or a little downhill run, we're still here. We're still establishing ourselves. But when we do climb a little bit, people's standards and aspirations change, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And it's like Nick's right, it is split into three, and we're in that middle section, I think, where we sort of just hover above the bottom three, but we're unlikely to break into the top six. So we are just about sort of surviving and hopefully maintaining our Premiership position in the mid-table.
Your status. Well, yeah. DR, you said you do want Palace to push on. How do they push on realistically?
Well, if you look at it away from last season, it was perfectly fine. I think we were ranked sixth. But you look at our home form, it was just dreadful. It's a simple thing of changing tactics. And that's why I was frustrated with Roy Hodgson, because we were completely a different side away from him and then at home. And it wasn't hard to spot. Even Ray Lewin, he said it the other day. He said it that teams play differently, but we didn't make any changes to adapt to that. So simple changes like that, not even like personnel changes, simple changes like that could make a huge difference, and it could lead us on going to the next step.
Well, let me ask you a quick question then, because I am actually a fan of Roy Hodgson. Roy is someone who I think is better than a lot of opposing fans and social media make out. It's very easy to fire jokes at Roy Hodgson, but he's actually achieved quite a lot in his career. He has kept Palace up. He's done a great job at Palace. You're happy to have him there doing that, keeping you up. Say Palace were to have an influx of money, ridiculous amounts. Would you still want him as the man to go and spend that amount?
No.
Yeah, no. See, I don't think so, because look, Roy Hodgson, he was happy with Gary Cahill, but I don't know if that was...
He doesn't. He tells Dougie Freedman and the board what sort of player he wants, and then it's down to Dougie to find that sort of player. He doesn't say, "Oh, go out and get me a Yapstam." Or, go on, show me out.
I don't wear Yapstam. 20 years ago, Nick. Couldn't even cut the mustard at Reading.
Look,
so you don't want Roy to spend... we don't want Roy to spend the money. But is it that a little bit fans having their cake and eating? Yeah, we want Roy to keep us in the league. But if we get money, no, we don't want Roy to spend it. Is that a little bit...
I guess so.
I mean, you've got those type of managers, haven't you, that will always be sort of bottom half, the Premiership managers, you know, Pulis, Allardyce, Hodgson.
I think Hodgson's better than that.
Well, he did get Fulham into Europe.
He got to a Europa League final.
Yeah, so he did very, very well.
People forget that.
And that's why I still believe in Roy being a successful manager at Crystal Palace.
Harry Kane on corners.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons.
Well, we're talking about the highlights, not the lowlights. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about, because we spoke about him a little bit, but not loads. Zaha, I mean, it's different for teams. You know, they sit there, they wait, transfer. Who are we going to sign? Who are we going to sign? The opposing flip side of that coin is some fans are like, please don't lose anyone. Please don't lose anyone. Could you lose Zaha? And is it kind of a cruel twist of fate that the first game this weekend is Everton?
Indeed, indeed. I just wanted the game to be about, you know, lording him over the Zenith Data Systems Cup trophy that we beat him at back in the day at the old Wembley. He's. I haven't seen any quotes from Wilf. I've seen quotes from his brother, who seems to be stirring things up. I've seen quotes from people from sports TV stations who look quite embarrassed when complete opposite of what they said is read out. We've seen statements from Everton saying that we put a bid in and it didn't get accepted, and as far as we're concerned, that's it. Suddenly this has come out again. We've got well-known newspaper columnists who are Palace supporters saying that it is on. You've got photos of Wilf on social media today back at training, really, really happy. You've got a photo of Wilf on social media modelling the new horrible wibbly-wobbly away kit, looking like he really didn't want to be there. I just don't know what's going on.
But Wilf did say that he wants to play Champions League football. And I feel like that's his way of saying, yes, I wouldn't mind a step. Like, I wouldn't mind a new challenge and going on to the next step. Wilf is not going to come out and say, I don't see Wilf coming out and saying that I want to leave Crystal Palace. But that's been the closest thing. He has said that he wants to move to the next step and get a new challenge. So it's not like Wilf has denied everything. He has admitted that he wants a new...
Well, just in short then, yes or no, I'll ask the three of you, will Wilf be a Crystal Palace player on Saturday, or will he be an Everton one?
Yes, but he'll be on the bench.
For Palace?
Yeah.
Palace.
Well, three yeses here. I'm going to make it four. Zaha is a Palace player. But next, we're going to be talking to Elliot Cuff, who's an Everton journalist, who may have a different answer.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport, and I'm joined with the boys from the Back of the Nest podcast, DR Kernaz, James Howard and Nick Gillard. And yes, it is time for the opposing fans' view. And I'm delighted to say I've been joined by Elliot Cuff, editor of Read Everton. Elliot, thank you for joining us tonight. Before we look at the Premiership kickoff and the first game, Palace-Everton, there's another big story here. Will Zaha be an Everton player? Have Everton given up in their pursuit for Wilf?
It's a really interesting one, actually. I'm not quite sure what the situation is. I think that if you'd asked me a couple of days ago, I would have said, yes, Everton had given up and moving on. But it seems that then they're still determined to land there, Matt. I think Marcus Silva is determined to get in a right-sided winger this summer. And with not many other targets emerging at the moment, it looks like he might go... that he might go down to the wire where he does go all out to try and bring in his man. So it'll be something really interesting to follow up until that deadline. I'm not quite sure which way I'd put money on now, but it will be really interesting to see where he does end up.
Are you not worried that we kind of made mugs of you selling you Bolasie for a ridiculous amount of money when we knew he couldn't do anything in front of goal?
In a way, yeah, I think. But I think Everton are in a difficult position at the moment where if we want to compete with the top six, if we want to eventually break that that barrier, we need to be bringing in these players. And any club around us knows what Everton want to do. They know the tactic we're trying to utilise, and they overcharge.
Yeah,
same with Swansea and Guilfi Sigurdsson. £45 million for Guilfi Sigurdsson from Swansea was unnecessarily high, but Swansea will make us pay it because they know we're desperate to bring in those names. So it is a worry, but I suppose if it does pay off, then we'll be laughing all the way to the top six. It's a gamble I think we have to take, and fingers crossed. I mean, Zaha's better than Bolasie anyway, let's be honest.
So let's
hope it pays off.
There's talk of, you know, a couple of your players being part exchange as part of the deal. What's your view on the Tosin? Because obviously, if we lose Zaha, that's a major, vacancy in our striker department. So how do you think Tosin would fit in for us?
I think he'd fit in quite well, to be honest. Last season you utilised Christian Benteke in that forward role, and he's quite a big presence, but also he's good with the ball at his feet, and I know he didn't have the most successful of seasons. Trent Tosin's very similar in that regard. He's a big man. He can get on the ball in the box, but also he's good with his feet. The problem is he had a really poor run last season, but towards the beginning of the year, he was really impressive with his hold-up play, with the way he distributed the ball. But Marcus Silva wasn't very patient. He wanted the goals right then and there, and he took him out of the team straight away. But I think if he's given the chance to impress under a manager, given that run of games to find his footing, I think he'd be really impressive for you. I know it's not the most important thing when you're looking at prospective transfer deals, but he's a really nice bloke, and it'd be really nice to see him succeed with a club like Crystal Palace.
Elliot, just two quick questions. We were speaking to the boys from the Back of the Nest podcast, talking a little bit about Roy Hodgson, and I said they seem happy with Roy when he's there, keeping him up, making Palace survive, but they wouldn't necessarily have Roy in charge if they did have a lot of money to spend. Over at Everton, you do have a lot of money to spend. Marco Silva is the man to be spending that money. Is he the right one to be spending that cash?
I think so. I think it's difficult at the moment in the transfer, in the business of hiring and firing new managers, because a good manager that's going to be cost effective and find you the right players is few and far between. And we've seen in the past, you know, we sacked Ronald Koeman after a particularly poor run of form, and we gave Sam Allardyce the job because there was no one else going, and he was disastrous for us. Even though he did get that 8th place finish, he was someone who was almost universally hated across the board from the Everton fan base. So it's difficult. I like Marcus Silva. I think he's really talented. He's not the finished article yet, but he's certainly a talented young coach. And I feel very confident that he is the right man to spend the money. And it's not just because of Silva, but also because of Marcel Brands, who is our head of our director of football, who comes from PSV. He's got a great record. His CV is very impressive. And that pairing seems to have worked wonders last summer with the majority of our summer signings. So whenever I see Silva and Brands approach someone now, like a Zaha, it does give me a lot more faith that we are moving in the right direction and spending the money correctly and in the right places.
So you've brought quite a few players in. Do you think they'll be ready to roll on Saturday? Do you think you'll hit the ground running when you play us?
It's hard to say, really, because in pre-season we've been quite poor in front of goal. We haven't really scored any goals. Calvert-Lewin has not been that impressive. Cenk Tosun hasn't played at all because he's been injured, or just coming back from an injury. But we have brought in the new signings this week, this Jean-Philippe Gbamin, this Moise Keane, who is a really promising striker. If he settles quickly, then I think we could be really threatening. Bernardo Richarlison out wide are really impressive, really dynamic. Marcus Silva likes to play expansive, free-flowing football. So possibly, but it all depends on how well Keane takes to the ground, whether he comes in straight away from the off, ready to go, fit and firing and impressing, then I think it will be a tough game for Palace. But Palace are a side that Everton have historically struggled against in the last couple of years. So it's not one I'm expecting a win. I'm hoping we get a good result.
Just a bigger look then, away from this game. It is the new Premiership season. Do you realistically think that Everton can break into that top six?
I think they can, but I don't think they will. I think they have the right tools at their disposal, they have the right players, but it all comes down to the moments on the pitch, and Everton don't really seem to have enough of that. It's very much a case of we have a good team on paper and we don't quite get the right execution. I think teams like Leicester and Wolves are also in a similar position where they're building very good units of players, but it all depends on how they approach each game. Everton still, I mean, towards the back end of last season, we beat Chelsea, Manchester United and Arsenal in a row of fixtures, but in general, we struggle against the top sides, and I think if we struggle against the top sides and we lose to teams like Burnley and we lose 3-2 to Newcastle, games like that mean that Everton don't deserve to be in the top six. So whereas they have the right tools at their disposal, I don't think they're quite ready yet to break through. They can do, and if it happens, it wouldn't be a massive surprise, but I still wouldn't want to put money on it.
Elliot, last question for you. Palace fans are quite down on Palace at the moment across social media, and but other teams' fans seem to have a better impression of Palace. How do you reckon Palace will do this year, and why? What do you think of when you think you're going to play Palace?
Well, as I said, we have a bit of a checkered relationship in terms of the past results, so I'm not overly that confident when we play Palace, but I quite like Crystal Palace as a club, and I'm not saying that because I'm on the Crystal Palace show.
Well saved. I think...
I'm a fan of the club, and I hope they do well. I'm not quite sure how Roy Hodgson fits in, because when you appointed him as manager, I thought that was quite underwhelming. And I think initially he seemed to do quite well. My main issue with Palace so far is they haven't really signed anyone this summer. They haven't made any big splashes in the transfer market. And I don't know whether that's you don't have the funds or you're just not being able to bring in the right players. But I mean, I've seen these last couple of days, it seems that Everton are about to sign Jabril Sidibe from Monaco, and that's another player you were linked with who you've now missed out on. You've brought back Jordan Ayew, but that's someone who, from an outsider's perspective, doesn't seem that inspiring. So I'd like to hope you can try and get towards that 11th, 12th, 13th place finish. I think you're certainly good enough to stay in the Premier League compared to a lot of the teams towards the back end of the bottom half. But I think you haven't brought in the necessary players to really kick on and try and launch an attack on that top 10. As I said, I really hope Palace have a really good season, just as long as it's not against Everton.
Elliot, then, just lastly, score prediction for Saturday.
I'm going to go 1-0. I think it'll be quite a cagey affair, and I'm going to say 1-0 to start the season.
1-0, there you go. Elliot Cuff, editor of Read Everton there. 1-1, can you believe it? I want to get your score prediction now from the three of you.
You didn't say good evening. Andy Gray had big words with you last week about
you
being
listening.
Polite to guests. Yeah. And you
Nick,
were straight in. You didn't say good evening. Your card's marked, son.
Nick, what I've done there, I've tried to put that in a box and forget
right.
about it. And you've just opened that really bad memories.
At least you know someone's listening.
Yeah, you was. I appreciate that, Nick. Honestly, I've tried to forget about that all week. You meant to go straight in there. Never mind.
Nightmares.
So let's get a score prediction from you three then.
Who's starting?
If we got Wilf, 2-1, Palace. If not, 1-1.
I'll say 1-1, and I'll be happy with that probably.
Oh.
Yeah.
Come on, James.
That's a tough one. I'll go 1-0 Palace.
Ah, here we go.
Regular listeners of this show will know, and Johnny Burrow knows, that I hate VAR. So I was just wondering if this season, just to show how ridiculous VAR is, can we predict how much time will be added onto a game?
It's not ridiculous, but
I reckon there'll be an extra 15 minutes on Saturday to VAR.
I think that's too much.
Yeah,
Nick.
That's too much.
That's a
you
lot
just
of
hate
time.
It. You just hate it. That's why you're
we
saying
need to
that.
Write these down.
I think,
you
I think seven, 7 minutes.
Even that's long. Even
that
that's
is,
long.
Yeah.
Yeah, like five, 4 minutes.
15's
yeah,
no
15
way.
Are we adding both halves though?
Yeah, that's overall the whole game.
15 minutes is still way too long. I know you don't like it, but it's going to help us next season. And sometimes it'll go against us, of course, but. At least now people, for us, it's very good because if Zaha stays and people are saying, oh, Zaha's a diver, well, look, there's VAR now. I know it's not going to be 100% correct, but the referee can get some help. And there were so many calls last season where it went against us. And
look, it's going to benefit you in games and it's going
to
go against you. It's going
so I'm looking forward
everyone's
to it.
In
yeah,
for
I'm
this.
Looking forward to VAR next season.
Did you say seven?
I'll say, no, 4 to 5.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to go 5. Yeah, I really don't think it'll be more than 5.
Down.
Why
are you putting your 15? Oh, well, you put your 15
What are you saying, James?
6. James, what are your feelings on VAR?
I'm all for it. To be honest with you, watching the Cricket World Cup, the Test match, Wimbledon.
DRS.
I love all this. I love it. It's just because there's so the officiating out there is so poor in a lot of sports. And it's not necessarily their fault. They're under a lot of pressure. And I think they just need the support. And we've got the support in technology, so why not use it?
Exactly. We always complain about referees going against us. Well, now there's VAR that could actually help the referees and help their decision-making.
I'm thinking about the fan experience for the paying punter in the ground,
I think
mate.
This is it. I think sport as a spectacle, you know, it does take away from the drama and entertainment, but there is drama in maybe watching it, but we're still not quite sure how it works. It does need clarifying, the whole VIA room, the VAR room, whatever it is, 8 officials, 27 TV screens, very different. But replays are getting shown in all Premier League stadiums this season, so apart from Anfield, because they haven't got a screen.
Really?
Yeah. Which is that, true, isn't it?
That's poor.
Yeah.
That's really poor.
So if you're getting a decision up there, you ain't going to be able to know, which is quite interesting. It's almost like Wimbledon, you know, when the Hawkeye system. Because that's going to play a part, isn't it, into the ref's mind, I guess.
Yeah, you talk about cricket. Cricket, at least it's visual, you can see it. It's whether something's a foul or not and whether there's intention there. And you're going to hear kids in the park saying, no, that's a VAR, we can't decide. What's the point of having a ref on Sunday football if, you know, if it can't be like the top game, then you're taken away from the whole sport.
But you're also going to be like, yeah, we won that and we wasn't cheated because of a ghost goal or a penalty that was never. So you know if you've won it and you've not lost it on a dubious decision. Well, this has been the Crystal Palace Fan Show with the Back of the Nest podcast. We'll be back next week and hopefully we'll be back with 3 points against Everton. Eagles!
Eagles!
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.